Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
As lovely as it was, the wedding day, in a beautiful place, all I could think about was gambling. That's the only thing that excited me, the thought of gambling.
Opening up can be a very big step, but it can also be incredibly helpful and reassuring for people.
I don't think I fully accepted what I was then until I lost everything.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday. The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Here we are, heading towards the end of 2023. Hasn't this year absolutely flown by? It really, really has. Plenty of conversations had, plenty more conversations still to come as well. And actually, some projects already lining themselves up quite nicely for 2024. I had some really nice feedback for the podcast this week. A guy came up to me at an event and he said, are you the guy from Mental Health Monday? And I said, yes, I am. And I sometimes think, oh, heck, where's this going to go? But it turned out he'd listened to a podcast when he was having a difficult time in his life and maybe was thinking about changing pathways, looking for a new direction, and heard a conversation on the podcast, which had just been the right conversation at the right time for him. So it's always absolutely fantastic to hear feedback like that. Because, of course, the conversations we have here on the programme, so varied, aren't they? And that's the nature of the mental health world, that sometimes a conversation one week might completely resonate. Another week, it might just be a conversation you find interesting. Another week, you might think, you know what, maybe this isn't a conversation for me. And that's absolutely fine. But that's the nature of the beast when it comes to podcasting, particularly when we've got more than 300 episodes that you can listen to. There's always a lot going on in each of them. So your feedback is always, always welcome. We've spoken a lot this year about gambling and gambling harms, that particularly off the back of our Football Untold series, which is a really great success. And I thank you for supporting that one too. There's some data out, which is out this week from Gamble Aware, which shows that as many as 2 in 3 adults who've experienced gambling problems have kept their experience hidden, with almost 2 in 5 of those who hadn't opened up stating feeling stigma, shame, guilt, fear of judgment, which just goes to show how much of a factor stigma is in so many different walks of life. The vast majority of those who opened up, though, about their gambling reported feeling better after speaking to someone. These are all stats from Gamble Aware, and I'll put a link to their website in the podcast notes for this week's conversation. But we're also going to be hearing from people who've been impacted by problem gambling, particularly from a female point of view, because alongside these stats comes this particular stat that services that help and support people with gambling problems have seen an 80% increase in the number of women coming forward in the last 4 years. An 80% increase in the number of women coming forward in the last 4 years. That's a big increase, isn't it? So I wanted to get to the bottom of that and maybe hear a female's perspective on gambling and gambling harm. So we're going to hear Alyssa's story. After that, we'll hear from Dr. Ellie Cannon, who is a GP, you've probably seen her on TV, to talk about why it's important to reach out for help and how you can go about reaching out for help. But first and foremost, I wanted to bring you Alyssa's story. She is such a brilliant talker about her experience and her experience of problem gambling and gambling harms cost her. It cost her a lot, not just financially, but in terms of family life, work and things like that. She sets out her story really clearly. And I thank Alyssa for her time and her honesty. And it's great to see that actually through contacting an organisation like Gamble Aware, she's been able to get herself on the right path and a path back to contentment away from the gambling world. She was such a great talker, and I think you're really going to enjoy listening to this conversation. On the technical point of view, a couple of dropouts. If you listen to this and think, you know, it's dropping out slightly, that's a problem at my end, not a problem at your end. You don't need new headphones, although, you know, Black Friday's coming and all that kind of stuff, if you do need them. But yeah, let's hear Alyssa's story and about how she first got into gambling.
Yeah, I was really young when I started gambling. I was about 9 years old. I found myself on the fruit machines. It was only like 5p a spin back then, £5 jackpot. But I was just hooked straight away. You know, at that age, although it might sound odd, I had a problem with it then. I remember winning £35 in total, and I came clean and gave it my mum to look after, and then I kept dipping into it, and when she found out it was gone, I was lying about it. You know, all the signs of a gambling addict, really trying to hide it all the way back then.
And so even back then, that those sort of like traits you see of somebody who's got gambling addiction, lies, trying to find a different, fabricate stories that had already kicked in. But I imagine £35 when you were like 9, 10 years of age, and the sort of like the sort of delights of a machine and a, you know, the 5p going in, you can see how that might be alluring to someone.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Well, back then as well, there was where you just put pounds in, you know, there were no notes, and you filled the tube up, and you could tell when they were going to drop and all that. So that was, you know, all you thought you could. That was quite alluring, as you say, yeah.
That was when you were a young age, when you're sort of still under sort of parental responsibility, obviously, within that environment. Did it feed into sort of teenage years and then into adult life?
Yeah, when I started like going in the pubs, working in pubs, I found myself on the fruit machines a lot then. However, it took a little bit of a backseat for a few years. You know, I was drinking with my friends and all that, so that kind of took over. But once I got to like my 20s, it came back in the form of bookies then, going in the bookmakers, putting on horse bets, football accumulators and all that. Do you know, like, I'd be in the bookies with men quadruple my age, you know. I found it fun at the time, all that.
I was going to say, some people might have thought someone in their early 20s, particularly a female, wouldn't have quite fit into that world of the bookies, but obviously you felt like, you know, you felt quite at home there. Or was it just that the desire to gamble was so strong you thought, well, I'll go in there anyway?
Well, to be honest, I was drinking in the pubs with older people and all that, but I would frequently leave the pub and go to the bookies next door to put bets on. I found as time went on, it became more and more that I wanted to be in there rather than in the pub socialising. So it's all the bright lights, the noises and all that. That's what reeled me in.
Can I ask you about the moment where you started to sort of maybe click, thinking, hang on a minute, this is getting a bit too much here? What were those sort of signs that you started to think, oh, hang on a minute?
To be honest, it wasn't until late on in life, when I got to about 30 year old, I'd stopped drinking and going to the pubs then, and I started online gambling, and at first it was the football accumulators. How it was nothing, hardly a quid here and there, but then as soon as I found the slots, the fruit machines, virtual fruit machines, it was hell for leather. Literally my wage was going in. As soon as I got it was going straight in. And I was borrowing money the same day I'd been paying, waiting for money to go back into my bank that I'd won. And it was just a cycle like that every month, finding money, borrowing money, all around gambling. And went on for years then, about 5 years.
Was there like a logic that you were trying to apply to the situation? Were you thinking, oh, I've got paid, therefore I can quadruple my money by gambling? It quite clearly wasn't working because you were constantly having to sort of reach for help and support. But what was your brain telling you at that time that meant that you sustained that activity?
Well, at first, when I'd set a limit in my head, and I'd always pass that straight away. And then it'd be the chasing the money so I had money to pay bills and things like that. And then it got to a point where the money that I owed out, I could have won like 3 or 4 times that amount, and I still wouldn't pay the money that I owed off. I'd end up gambling it all. You know, I could have paid my debts off and had a lot of money left over. The power of gambling was stronger than like the desire to pay my bills, basically, pay my debts.
When that's happening, or when you're in that cycle, is it just a case of, well, just one more spin? Or, well, I'll just see what happens in the next
5 minutes, but then it becomes 10 minutes. Is that, does it become almost a bubble where those figures almost don't really exist?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's, when it's online, it's like, it's not real money. And also in the back of my mind, I've always got, oh, I can have such and such for a borrow. And, you know, it was like money would have no value to me whatsoever by the end of it. You know, I was married and everything, and the potential of it all coming out, because I kept it a secret all those years, the potential of it all coming out and the life as I knew it being over was not a strong enough consequence for me. It was just, it's hard to explain. I just could not stop. For the life of me, I could not stop.
You mentioned before the sort of the lies you used to tell your mum when that 35 quid disappears. What, as you become like an adult, what were the sort of the stories that you would tell? What were those things that you'd turn to when you needed to borrow money from different people and, you know, you'd just been paid, but then there was a payday loan due? What were those sort of things that you were saying to people to try and maintain that front and keep that money coming through?
It'd be things like, I've not been paid right, or we need to get a new fridge, or because my wife had kids, my ex-wife has kids, sorry. So it'd be, oh, we need to pay this trip for one of the kids, or just anything. But, you know, it's, I hate the fact that I told so many lies, but my family were on to me, but they never said anything. They never said anything, and they hold a lot of guilt over that, which makes me feel really bad. It's not nice that they've been damaged through it all as well. It's damaged so many people with this, with gambling, all the lies are told.
Was that exhausting for you as well, to sort of maintain the lies, maintain, like, trying to remember which lie you told to which person and who you owed money to and when they were due to be paid back and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it was. It was constant. It was 24/7 anxiety, a constant anxiety. I didn't know what it was back then, the feeling, but what it was when I stopped that I realised what it was. It just keeps you up at night. You know, if I wasn't gambling, I was thinking about where I could have money to gamble. It was all the time. It was affecting my work, affecting my home life, affecting my relationships with people. I only spoke to my family when I wanted money because I was so engrossed in gambling. A phone to me was for gambling, not for contacting people. You know, it took over my life.
Am I right in saying, Alyssa, that there was an issue you had around your wedding day and money that people had gifted? Are you okay sharing that with us?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I got married in 2021 and I wasn't a drinker or anything back then. So everyone would be, like, we went abroad. And so everyone would stay up at night drinking, and I'd go back to the hotel room, gambling, just chilling out, but gambling as well. And then, like, for our wedding, some of my family gifted us money and put it into a bank account. It was almost £1,000 in total. And I gambled all that away on the night of the wedding. I left my own wedding early to go and gamble.
I mean, that's a clear sign, isn't it, that's a relationship with gambling that is obviously taking over, because it's taken over that what is supposed to be the best day of your life. At the time, were you in that, I don't, you know, everyone's been to a sort of a wedding, were you thinking, I can get away here, I'd rather go on my phone for a bit? What was your brain telling you during that time?
This sounds really harsh as well, but around then, I wasn't excited about anything either. So the actual, as lovely as it was, the wedding day, you know, having everyone there in a beautiful place, I didn't feel any excitement for it either. All I could think about was gambling. That's the only thing that excited me, the thought of gambling and finding ways and means to do it. That's all I got excited about in those times. There's an element of when I was probably saying my vows, I was probably thinking about gambling at the same time, in all honesty.
That's, I think, a testament. Thanks for your honesty, by the way, on that one, Alyssa. I think it's a testament to how sort of invasive these sorts of thoughts can be. I'm just looking at these new stats from GambleAware, which are out this week, that are looking at the fact that still people don't ask for help because they feel shame, stigma, embarrassment. For you, what's the moment where you go, you know what, I probably need some help on this? What is that thing that makes you go, this has gone too far, I now need some support?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I didn't get that caught in time. I got caught out with all my lies. I'd looked after some money for a friend, and I dipped into it. Like, I stole money from her, basically. My mind's telling me I'll put it back, but it was never going to happen. And when the friend came, said she was coming to get it, like, obviously, it wasn't there. So I asked another friend to lend me some money to cover it up. And she said she would lend me the money, provided I came clean, to my ex-wife. So I told my ex-wife, bare minimum, I didn't even come clean. And I got thrown out of the house, but I managed to sort things out. And then it eventually all came out in the end anyway, and I was completely kicked out of the house. You know, I lost my home, my wife, stepkids, pets, my job, lost everything. It wasn't until then, until losing everything, that I actually asked for help. I'd gone to Gamblers Anonymous previously, when I first got asked to leave, but it just wasn't something that suited me at the time. I don't think I fully accepted what I was then, until I lost everything. I do wish I'd have tried to seek help sooner. I didn't know there was anything out there, to be honest. But it was literally when once I lost everything was when I reached out for help.
I think it's always so interesting when you speak to people who've been in similar situations that, you know, it's that thing of, you know, can you reach someone a little bit further upstream, you know, to get them help before it? But then for so many people, it takes that rock, they call it the rock bottom moment, doesn't it, before you start asking for help. Can I ask you, what maybe was it then with the stuff you did with GambleAware? Was it like, was it the people you were speaking to? Was it the environment? What was the thing that made you thought, oh, well, maybe GA didn't work for me, but maybe this might work for me? Was it something in particular?
I would say with... I wasn't open-minded enough with Gamblers Anonymous. I was, you know, there's few things that they mentioned that I was just completely closed off to. I wanted a quick fix, you know, like any addict, quick fix. But with GambleAware, it's people that understand you, with the lived experience and things like that. And, you know, it's the thought of having to go to a meeting every week for the rest of my life was daunting. It was like, wow, I can't do this. But then when we like GambleAware and the help they can provide, it opens up your eyes in a different way. And then, you know, now I follow a 12-step program. Because I've had an opportunity to sit back and have a look at myself properly, do you know what I mean? And actually, that is part of what I need as well. You know, it's just finding a new way to live. And I just needed someone's hand to show me the way, really, in the first place.
It's fantastic you've been able to get that support. You found that way through. It's interesting, as part of this research from GambleAware, some charities are reporting an 80% increase in the number of women who they're now dealing. And in some cases, women are around about a quarter of the sort of members who might be part of those sort of support groups. I sometimes think when you hear those numbers, it doesn't quite make sense. But then you hear the story, you kind of go, all right. So I guess you would be one of those stats, you know, Alyssa, your story fits into that. What for you is the story of women who are gambling then? Where do you think that increase is coming from? And how are we sort of moving in that direction that we see such a big increase, do you think?
I think one of the main reasons for an increase has been COVID. I think people probably used to go out and socialize, even if it was to the bingo or, you know, to the pub or to, you know, people used to be able to go out and socialize. And when that came, sometimes the only socializing people had was the chat rooms on these online sites. And when you look at the advertising around them, that's how they make it look as well, as if you're going to meet loads of friends and, you know, and it's all win-win-win and living a glamorous lifestyle and all that. And, you know, that's appealing to some people. But I think this, the stigma around women gamblers is it's perceived as a man's thing, isn't it? Gambling, you know, even like when I was in the bookies years ago, it was always the men in there. Very rarely saw a woman in there unless she was the one serving you. I just think women I just think women are not, they're not supposed to gamble in the eyes of society. They're supposed to be the strong ones at home. That's how it's perceived, isn't it?
Well, I wonder whether or not it comes from, like, a lot of the traditional gambling things maybe comes from, I don't know if this is true or not, but like, men would say go to the football and then go to the bookies on the way, or they go to work and the woman would be at home. I'm talking like way back. And then, so like, the woman wouldn't have the access to the money to go and gamble because they'd be doing the other stuff. And I wonder whether or not what you talked about there with, you know, the mobile phones and the tablets and the chat rooms, that actually that's leveled the playing field now to sort of say, well, men can do that as well, but women can do that exactly the same. So if anything, we've just seen almost like the sort of the equalization of that playing out in real time. But of course, for every person who then develops a problem, you get a story, you get a, you know, human's life who's been, you know, massively impacted by it. So do you feel like it's the sort of thing that we now need to keep an eye on, the levels of women who are gambling, the people who we wouldn't necessarily look at and think, well, they might be a problem gambler? Is that something we need to have stronger sort of eyes on now as we sort of move into the future, particularly where there's so many things happening on phones and tablets?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I kept it a complete secret for around 5 years. You know, nobody knew. You know, it's just so secretive. And before anyone knows, you can be at your rock bottom, as you say. You know, it can be stopped before then, though. You know, there's so much help out there now. And it doesn't have to come to losing everything. Or, like, at one point, like, when I lost everything, I was ready to take my own life. And it was only through getting in touch with, like, Gamble Aware that didn't happen, because I felt some hope then. You know, but that's what it comes to. There's a lot of suicides every year in relation to gambling harm. You know, it doesn't have to come to that. Oh, there is help out there. People just really need to speak out sooner. Even if you don't think it's a bad problem right now, it can soon change to be one. You know, it only takes one spin to lose it all.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, really key message there, I think. And for those people, I was going to mention that, for those people who were listening to this who were thinking, yeah, but I'm not that bad, or things haven't got that bad for me. We talked before, didn't we, about can we go further upstream? What would you say to those people who maybe aren't at that rock bottom yet, and maybe in their own minds, they're not going to hit that rock bottom, but anyone with any experience, someone like yourself, would look at them and go, I can see what's coming to you. What would you say to them?
I would say to go online and maybe try and do the self-assessment, because that will give you an idea whether you have a problem or not. You know, there's questions like, are you spending more than you can afford to lose? Have you lied about gambling? Has it affected anyone? Have you been told by anyone that you might have a problem? You know, if you're answering all of those questions, then there's a high chance that you have a problem. And just because it's not affecting you now doesn't mean it won't in the future. I know a couple of successful gamblers that it has affected their life. You know, it's not about the money. It's about the not the material things. It's the people in your life that you hurt yourself. You know, I lost all my personal characteristics. I was not sociable. You know, I was angry all the time. That's not me. I'm a nice person. You know what I mean? I used to be a right lass when I was younger before all this addiction took over me. It can take so much more than money, but obviously it's still an issue.
No, absolutely, absolutely. We'll send people in the direction of the Gambler website, as you mentioned, though, those self-assessment tools as well. It might sort of jolt a few people to think, okay, maybe I can. I think the fact they might even be listening to this conversation gives us a clue that they might be thinking, oh, maybe there's something that we need to take a look at. Alyssa, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate your honesty and for speaking to us. Wish you all the best in terms of your ongoing journey as well. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, mate. Thank you.
So that's Alyssa's story. Really appreciate Alyssa joining us for the program and to be so open and honest about her experience. Let's move the conversation on now. Let's bring Dr. Ellie Cannon into the conversation, who is a writer. You've probably seen her on TV screen. She's a GP as well. Dr. Ellie, thank you so much for your time. Such an important issue, isn't it, to talk about problem gambling in a world, as we've heard, that actually some people feel like there's either no help out there or they don't know what that pathway to help actually is, where quite clearly the pathways are there. We just need to get people looking in the right direction, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly it. There is more help out there than people realise. But unfortunately, as you've spoken about, one of the big problems is the stigma and guilt around gambling and the harms that it causes that actually stops people getting the help. So we know from this research that Gambler Aware did that 2 in 5 people said it was this stigma, like shame and guilt and the worry about being judged, that actually was the barrier to them reaching out for help.
I think one of the things as well, particularly with gambling addiction, that sometimes, and I've heard many addicts say this, if you stop smoking, for instance, people go, oh, congratulations, you've stopped smoking. And that's almost like the start where your body starts to recover. When it comes to gambling addiction, often people say, well, actually, when you admit there's a problem, that's often the point at which you have to then start having to deal with the world that you've built around yourself to sort of enhance and create this sort of, or allow this addiction to take over. And that can be a big mountain to overcome. If you think, well, it's time to admit I've got a problem, but that also means I've got to tackle some of the financial issues. I've got to tackle, as we heard from Alyssa, maybe some of the lies that I've been telling about what I've been up to. That's a big step to take, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a really big step to take. And I think that's probably why 3 out of 4 people said that they sort of feel better after speaking to somebody. They've finally climbed that hill, that mountain, as you said, of sort of getting it out there. And all the problems that comes with. And you're absolutely right. Gambling harms are uniquely hidden. If you are smoking and also to a lesser extent, but usually if you have an addiction to alcohol, people tend to know about it. Whereas gambling harms are uniquely hidden. It's something that people can do in the privacy of their own home, the privacy of them looking at their own smartphone. It's not something people talk about because of the shame. And so opening up can be a very big step, but it can also be a very effective and curative step as well. It can be incredibly helpful and reassuring for people.
Do people approach that? GPs with gambling addiction? I think sometimes people will think, well, if it's a smoking or a drinking thing, because of the physical impacts, you would instantly turn to your GP. But you guys will be well qualified in spotting the signs around addiction and obviously knowing where to signpost as well. What sort of things present themselves to you in that regard?
Well, it's a great point, actually. So obviously, there's lots of different harms from gambling. So there's the financial harms, which we can all identify, but there's also physical health problems associated with it, mental health problems associated with it, such as anxiety and depression. As a loved one, it can affect you and cause harms in terms of the relationship breakdown and family dynamics and what's happening in your household. So absolutely, a GP is a great person to speak to about gambling. Of course, I would say that, but that's because I've experienced that speaking to patients, and we know what help is available locally, whether that is the national gambling help, but also local clinics. There are clinics that specialize in helping people with gambling harms. There are peer support groups that specialize in that type of help, and a GP can help you with all of those other things as well, like the physical health problems and the mental health problems.
The figure, the headline figure in regard to female gambling, some services seen an 80% rise in the last 4 years. Yeah. Alyssa was saying that in terms of her story, you know, she said when she used to go to a bookmaker's, the only other woman in there would be the person serving them behind the counter. But then there was the move to the online. Is that the story? Is that the narrative, do you think, Dr. Ellie, that actually the online world has maybe brought more women into it?
Yes, I think the research confirms that, absolutely, because obviously there's no sort of shame or embarrassment in looking at your smartphone, because we're all doing that now. And we know that that is something that particularly affects women. It's a type of harm that you can access, or that can access you, from the comfort of your own home. There isn't the need, as you said, to go and buy a scratch card or to walk into a bookies. So it becomes very pervasive, and that's how it's affected a lot more women in the last few years, and of course younger people as well.
Yeah, and I was going to say, smartphones aren't going away, are they? And the online world isn't going away. So I guess when we talk about stigma, there's that danger, isn't it, that an opportunity presents itself more and more so, but people don't feel like they can talk about it. That's something that as a society we've got to get across now, isn't it? Otherwise, those numbers, you would imagine, would continue to increase, because people would continue to fall into the trap of gambling addiction, and yet that social stigma will prevent them from getting help. So that those two things can't go on forever if we want to really sort of get on top of this as an issue.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So as we've said, you know, it's the stigma, which is actually a harm in itself of gambling, and that is preventing people getting the help. As you say, the smartphone, social media is not going anywhere, but the stigma is something that we can work on. It's a barrier for people to ask for help, whether it's a loved one or from a healthcare professional. We know it's even a barrier to people recognizing the problem in themselves. You know, often it prevents an individual actually knowing themselves that they're experiencing gambling harms. It allows people to feel judged and discriminated against. So the whole idea behind this campaign is to break down that stigma, increase these type of conversations that we're having, help to change those perceptions, just so people start to access the support that they need to turn their life around.
Yeah, and there's some great services through Gamble Aware, and I'll put a link on the podcast notes where you can actually do almost like a test and sort of ask yourself these questions. And I think sometimes that self-awareness can be a vital thing. Even if you don't think there's a problem, you might think, well, let's just see where I'm up to on this and let's see how I score maybe.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend that people do that self-assessment tool, so they can really see if there are those sort of cardinal signs of harms from gambling. For example, if you are always chasing your losses or hiding your gambling and seeking out gambling opportunities. As you said, somebody seeking out gambling on their wedding day. And often it is hard to recognize that in ourselves because of the stigma. And because we try and convince ourselves otherwise.
No, absolutely. Dr. Ellie, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you joining us and for your expertise on this really important issue. As I say, I'll put the notes to where people can go and get some of that signposting support as well. But a conversation with a GP could be a good starting point for someone as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 852 852-
58. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.